ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
I'm David Marr, host of Late Night Live on Radio National, where nothing's off limits.
You know, part of being an adult is dealing with discomfort.
We gather the sharpest minds around to hash over what's shaping this crazy world.
Both the Republican Party and the Democratic Party succumbed to big money.
Late Night Live, four new shows a week on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you thought US politics under Trump couldn't get any weirder,
Trump's latest stoush with the Pope reached new heights of strangeness.
Are Christians having a Trump-sized reckoning in the United States?
Or have the men of MAGA simply traded the burning cross for the smartphone and the rally stage?
I'm Hamish McDonald.
And I'm Waleed Ali.
Welcome to Global Roaming. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Waleed Ali to the program for the very first time. G'day.
Hey, thank you very much for having me. We'll see if I can crash it by the time we're done.
I mean, what a quiet moment in the world for you to be joining us, Waleed.
No, there are too many things to be talking about. I'm actually really glad, though, that I managed to land on this particular one, this particular episode, because I don't recall anything quite like this.
I don't know how much you're on social media. My memory is that you're not really at all. So did you see the tweet or the ex post from Trump, him as Jesus? How did you react?
I immediately thought it was a doctor, and I thought this is above board and fine. Of course I saw it. There's this weird thing that seems to only happen in the Trump administration, I think, Hamish, where you are simultaneously shocked and completely expectant of something. And that's kind of how I felt. It was like, hang on, he can't have crossed that line. But then it's, well, of course, he's crossed so many lines before. This one was fascinating because I think the speed with which he stepped back over that line, he retreated. But then I think there was just the ongoing fight, we're going to call it that, stoush between the Trump administration. And I say the administration because it descended also down into the vice president, other figures in the administration on the one hand, and Pope Leo on the other. And I think this is a fascinating moment because it's one thing taking on Jesus. Apparently, it's a different thing taking on the Pope. And that immediately has Catholic Protestant implications. And that has implications within the whole coalition. And we should remember it is a coalition that makes up MAGA.
It's interesting, though, that this particular image did cross a line, whereas Trump had also previously posted an image of himself as the Pope. And that somehow didn't.
And this is what I mean. The Pope is clearly not Jesus, but the Pope is very significant if you're Catholic and not significant at all if you're Protestant. So is there something in that? Like, is that actually the lesson to draw from here? I think what sits beneath all of it, though, is something that I think we've long known. It just hasn't quite been manifest in this visual way, I would say, Hamish. I don't know if you agree. And that is that Trump's not a religious man. There's no indication of that. He's not himself a Christian.
Well, post-assassination attempt, you know, didn't he see God?
Yes. But again, I mean, now we run headlong into the question of the invocation of God in American politics and exactly what it means. And in some ways it works best. I wouldn't mind getting into this, actually. It works best when there's no content attributed to God. It's just kind of a symbol that you can draw on, right? In God we trust is on the dollar bill, but we don't need to say anything more about God in order to have it as have him as a political touchstone, if you like. I don't know. Trump's not religious, but clearly has been seen as a useful tool or perhaps a vanguard for a lot of religious voters in the United States, particularly those who are conservative. The contradiction is best unmentioned, I suppose. Now it has to be. But MAGA is so resilient. We've seen that in the past. We've seen, you know, I know there's a fracture in the MAGA coalition over the war in Iran, but a lot of MAGA voters are now prepared to support that war, having believed in everything that is the opposite of that all along to this point. Mm. So there's something about the stickiness of MAGA voters. The question then becomes, does that stickiness apply to MAGA Catholics when he's taken on the Pope in this way?
It's a sort of branding exercise for this war. In a sense, could you interpret it that way to describe it as a holy war, might help a voting populace that never wanted more of these wars to accept it or at least entertain the thought of it?
I hadn't actually thought of that. I think you might be onto something there, actually. Maybe brands is a good way for us to enter this whole field. When we talk about Christian nationalism, for example, we talk about the Christian iconography or the Christian labels that are applied to things. Hamish, don't you think we are talking about symbols?
Yeah.
To a great extent. And around the world, like I think of the anti-immigrant marches we've seen, for example, in Britain and people holding up crosses and so on. I don't know how many of those people are in church, Hamish. I don't know that it's a religious thing, as so often happens with religion in politics. It's not really about religion, but it is about the importation of religious symbols as a rallying cry, as a flag around which people can gather, almost as a substitute for some kind of other version of nationalism that's being articulated, though not necessarily explicitly. I don't know. I mean, have I taken your point and run too far with it?
No, you've probably made more sense of it, my friend. Listen, someone that I think is going to be really helpful to us in understanding this is Elizabeth Brunig. She's a staff writer at The Atlantic, but she writes about theology and politics and previously wrote for The New York Times, Washington Post as well. She converted to Catholicism while studying for a master's degree in Christian theology at Cambridge University. Here she is.
Liz Brunig, welcome to Global Roaming.
Thank you for having me.
What a moment. are Christians having a bit of a Trump-sized reckoning in the US at the moment?
Yes, I think that's to say the least. The right wing has control of the American government right now, and so we're sort of seeing a panoply of traditions on the right pick up steam just because it's suffused with cash. There's a lot of dynamism going right now, and so you have a certain contingent of especially quite young, recent convert Catholics who are part of the Republican coalition right now. You also have this sort of classic base of evangelicals who have been sort of key to Republicans winning a lot of major elections, including the election of President Ronald Reagan, President George W. Bush. And then you have this sort of third Reformed Protestant tradition that's picking up, which you can see in people like Pete Hegseth, that is distinct from evangelical Christianity. It's not Catholicism. In a lot of ways, it's just as right wing or more than typical conservative evangelicalism. So I think those are kind of three of the data points to watch when we're talking about what's going on with Christianity and politics in the U.S. right now.
Liz, we began this conversation by talking about what Trump had done and obviously the posts on social media, him as Jesus, it got a huge reaction. Could we interpret this as being him falling out with religious supporters, or is that just too simple to interpret that?
I mean, it's certainly a reversal and I think a long-term warming of relations between the United States and the Vatican and the United States and its Catholics in general. Of course, in the United States right now, everything is, hyper-polarized. And I think it kind of goes without saying that for a lot of Americans, politics is their religion, right? It preempts their religion. Their religious beliefs flow from their politics. And so in that sense, are Christians who supported Trump going to necessarily be peeled off by what's going on between Trump and the Pope? Not necessarily. They may just as well find, excuses for Trump's behavior here. But it's not impossible to think that there are a number of Catholics in the MAGA coalition who are now kind of thinking twice about how tight the partnership between their religion and the United States government is actually going to be.
But it's always been a tenuous relationship anyway, right? Like sometimes you see Trump, like when he's appearing alongside religious figures, there was the image in the White House, they've all got their hands on his shoulder. Like sometimes he almost looks like he's smirking, like he knows he's faking it a bit. Like do people broadly believe that he is of faith or that he really wants to work with these people, or do they just see it as a kind of brazen, I'm going to say the right things so that you'll vote for me?
Yeah, I think it really depends. I think that for a while, the evangelicals who supported Trump told themselves that Trump is not necessarily a Christian president. He's a vehicle for Christian ambitions. So they were going to sort of throw their support behind Trump, not because he was one of them, but because he would privilege them in his administration. And so I think that's sort of how they made that work for them for a while, is just thinking, well, he's distinct from our movement. He's not subject to our rules. But especially with the second Trump term post-assassination attempt, there really does seem to have been an effort inside his campaign and administration to really propose that there had been a religious, spiritual development in his life and that he really is a God-fearing man now. But of course, as with a lot of things involving Trump, it seems mostly to be a scam. You know, just asking me, someone who's been watching Trump since 2015, he's never really seemed to care that much about Christianity. And the things he has said about Christianity, I think, have always been pretty shallow. He's never showed any real familiarity with scripture. He certainly doesn't really seem to operate by any kind of Christian ethics. So one would hope this would be another clue for people in that MAGA constituency to consider the idea that Trump maybe isn't looking out for their best interests.
The issue, though, of religion in American politics has always been a bit of a tricky one. I'm immediately put in mind of, you know, Robert Beller's classic essay in the 60s about American religion being really a civil religion that doesn't have theological content. And he expands on that in a lot of detail, which is beyond the scope of this conversation, perhaps. But it seems to me that it can work as a kind of gravitational force or an attractor, as long as the specifics aren't there. Is there something that happens, though, when the sectarian dimensions of American Christianity come to the fore? So I think of what we've seen recently. You know, Donald Trump puts that AI image of himself as Jesus and immediately has to take that down. But his mocking of the Pope, that seems to be able to stay. And I wonder what sort of fractures open up once you start getting sort of sectarianally or denominationally specific like that.
Well, I think that you are starting to see some, you know, fissures form between those sort of different sects that are operating inside the MAGA coalition right now. I think that posting a pic of himself as Jesus was outrageous enough, even on top of the outrage that he had already kicked up by attacking the Pope on Twitter, on Truth Social, excuse me. There was already that level of outrage, and then posting the picture of himself as Jesus really just exploded the degree of outrage. And I think it created outrage among people that he felt like he had to listen to. So I assume these are the leaders of the evangelical denominations that are really fond of Trump. So I'm thinking of folks like Paula White, who I think you mentioned the Easter time address from the White House, where people were laying hands on Trump and Trump seemed to take it almost as a joke.
I guess, as ever with Trump, the difficulty is in trying to figure out how much what anything means ultimately. Like, how much is episodic, how much is rooted in history and therefore an extension of it, all those sorts of things. I guess I want your expertise on the Catholic experience in America here, because there's a long history of Catholic or anti-Catholic discrimination in American politics. You immediately think of, you know, mobs in the 19th century, anti-Catholic mobs, the Ku Klux Klan and its anti-Catholic posturing, the absence of Catholic presidents until you get to JFK, and then even after that, not again until you get to Biden. You have all these sorts of things. So I can see an analysis that says, well, you know, it's this American anti-Catholicism rearing its head again. On the other hand, Trump could be sui generis. He just doesn't like a guy who says something that criticizes him, and he doesn't think about whether it's the Pope. You know, within that spectrum, how would you advise us to situate our analysis?
So I think your analysis right there at the end is the correct one, that Trump isn't as much tapping into sort of ancient American veins of anti-Catholicism, although that is deep in American DNA. That suspicion of Catholicism, that sort of old-timey nativist belief that Catholics are essentially foreign agents who are beholden to the Pope and are never going to be loyal Americans, that is still there in the American DNA. JFK had to push back really hard on that. But I think Trump is almost not even interested enough in principle to have any ideas about Catholicism that reflect these kind of old feelings about Catholics in America. I think instead this is just like an instant expediency problem for him. It just happens to be in this moment, the person he feels is arguing with him on the world stage about this war is the Pope. And so Trump has no respect for any other head of state. I think he's made it very clear he operates via force, and he can't bully the Pope. So he feels like he's at a loss, and he takes to social media. And I think that's really all there is to it. That doesn't mean that his supporters don't harbor some of those old-fashioned anti-Catholic beliefs, yeah.
How much of a difference do you think it makes, Elizabeth, that the Pope is an American from Chicago?
I mean, I think it makes a huge difference with Pope Francis, who the conservatives also didn't like. You know, he wasn't a native English speaker, so there was always some kind of translation going on when we were thinking about Pope Francis' remarks in the English-speaking world. But the current Pope, Pope Leo, is a native English speaker. He's an American guy. And he not only speaks this language and can therefore speak especially clearly in this language, but he is quite aware of what's going on inside the Anglosphere at the moment, the debates that are playing out, the impact it's having on the world. So I think he feels much more prepared to enter into those debates, even than Francis, who did not shy away from it. The thing that's been, I think, kind of surprising to me about Leo's papacy is how willing he is to go to the mat on issues around war and killing.
Yeah, I mean, he seems to, even in trying to clarify that he wasn't attacking Donald Trump, he did seem to be trying to demarcate very clear territory about the Catholic Church's position on conflict, right, and instigating conflict. And I wonder how then you think we should come at, you know, references to things like holy wars when the United States is launching another war in the Middle East.
So I think there are a couple of things at play. I think there are people in the Trump administration, a lot of them evangelicals. I'm thinking here about Mike Huckabee, for instance.
Who's currently the U.S. ambassador to Israel.
Yes. And I think for evangelicals of a certain vintage, especially around issues of Israel, they feel like these are sort of key to their beliefs about how the apocalypse is going to unfold. And they feel like they have certain duties and responsibilities to participate in the end times in a particular way. They feel like the United States has a special role in the apocalypse, which there's a certain degree of hubris in that, right? Like, I'm not sure we are a world historically important power. We just happen to be for the moment. Nevertheless, I think there are people in the administration like Huckabee who have those beliefs and are willing to entertain this as a kind of spiritually motivated war. And then I think you have people like Pete Hegseth, who doesn't really seem all that educated in Christianity. He doesn't seem like a believer. He recently quoted Pulp Fiction as a Bible verse, seemingly unaware that the Bible verse he was quoting from the movie is not in the Bible. And so I wouldn't say he takes the religion seriously, but he has very wholeheartedly leaned into this language of leading a holy war. And that has kind of been intermingled with these evangelical feelings about this being apocalyptic.
Liz, we might be overlooking that, you know, popular culture does qualify as scripture in a lot of America, and maybe Pete Hegseth was onto something quite deep in the American psyche. So what now for conservative Catholics? They've got every reason to be disillusioned with the Democrat Party over decades now of hyper-secularization, a kind of progressivism that runs antithetical to a lot of Catholic social teaching, although there are the, you know, social justice dimensions of it. Abortion has obviously been a very big issue for a lot of conservative Catholics, and yet here they are watching the man who would be their vanguard in a certain sense take on the holiest figure in the living world for them, if that's not an incorrect way to describe it. I think you know what I mean. Do they find themselves homeless? Do they hang on out of pragmatism? How do you read the moment?
You know, it is an interesting moment for them because I think that the GOP, which I think we were just talking about a minute ago, has traditionally, at least in the past several decades, had a stronghold in the evangelicals, and they have been the largest single religious constituency inside the Republican Party for a little while, as far as I know. And so Catholics have never really been key to the Republican strategy, but for the reasons that you were citing, abortion and social issues, they have typically tagged along. And in this administration in particular, the relationship appeared like it was going to be pretty cozy. And that's in part because J.D. Vance is part of this administration. He's a very public convert to Catholicism. He has a forthcoming book about his conversion to Catholicism. It's called Communion. So he's really leaning into that element of his identity. And Trump is also advised by people like Steve Bannon, who, again, is a self-described super Catholic. He really cares about the faith, to listen to him talk. But I think those people are kind of in a bind here because this is a real radical departure from what that relationship between Trump and the Vatican might have been like. I think it would have been very different if they had had their way. But they're just kind of hamstrung a little bit because Leo is not the Pope that they wanted. He's not a hardcore correction to Francis. That's what they had hoped for. And so now they're Catholics who are publicly committed to being Catholic and take themselves quite seriously as conservative Catholics who are, in fact, kind of in schism with Rome. So what happens with the sort of lay Catholics who are in this coalition? I mean, I think a lot of them will make excuses and say the Pope should stay out of politics and so on. And I think, you know, that's a convenient reason to move on from this, though it's not actually legitimate. Or they will say, well, I don't have to agree with President Trump as a Catholic. They'll find ways, I expect, to reconcile themselves to this.
So Liz, the arithmetic of this, 20% of American citizens are Catholics. I don't know how they split, Democrat and Republican. What do you expect the fallout to be in the midterms?
So American Catholics are split pretty much right down the middle, Democrat versus Republican. So I think the Catholic vote is important and it could be decisive if Catholics just decide to stay home in the midterms and don't throw their support behind Republicans. It could be a very important loss for Trump if Catholics in the Republican coalition don't show up the way he expects.
Does Trump contributing to this Bible reading, public Bible reading throughout the course of this week, does that make any difference? Does that make amends? Does that help stitch together those that are saying, what on earth are you doing?
I mean, it's clearly a really cynical ploy to trick people who are maybe a little bit perturbed about the president presenting himself as Jesus. But I'm not sure that it's convincing to anyone or that it means anything to anyone. The only thing that it demonstrates, to my mind, is once more how stupid Trump thinks his Christian supporters are. He could not hold these people in any greater contempt than he does.
Liz, thank you very much for your time and your insights. It's been really helpful to try and piece together this pretty complex picture.
Thanks so much, Liz.
Thanks so much for having me on.
So, Waleed, I know you wanted that conversation to keep going longer. And in a sense, I kind of want to know what you're left guessing about it, because I slightly struggle with this because in part it seems a bit incoherent, which is often the case with Trump and ideology. Like you're sort of, you're trying to thread it together.
It's also the case, I think, with democracies, right? So one of the issues, just reading some Catholic voices on this, you get the sense that, well, there are certain lines that cannot be crossed and disrespecting the Holy Father is one of them. We need a political home. But on the other, there is never a party that is going to perfectly replicate Catholic doctrine. And if the Trump's Republican Party is not the political home, or perhaps neither the Democrats are either, in America you have the option of abstaining, which does become a live political act in a certain way that's not really available in Australia. But yeah, you're looking at kind of shapes that don't quite fit together, having to, you know, be smashed into each other, and occasionally sparks fly. The question then becomes, well, will those sparks catch fire at a certain point?
Yeah.
What are the red lines that are being crossed? If the war in Iran itself wasn't a red line, then maybe the red lines that matter become those that are doctrinal or perhaps even symbolic. Mm. And I wonder about that, is the extent to which when we talk about religion in politics, we're actually talking about religious symbolism in politics more than we're talking about specific teaching.
Well, I guess that's what that's a better way of describing what is going on in my head right now, which is, to me, it looks a little bit like, you know, people going around with a kind of pick and mix lolly bag and grabbing the little anecdotes or verses from the Bible or moments from history or even iconography and kind of putting them into something that they feel comfortable spruiking or talking about or using as a basis for action.
Yes, I think that's exactly the phenomenon you're looking at. We're all human beings. We all do it, I guess. But it's also a very dangerous thing to do in the context of religion. This is what's fascinating about me. It's one thing to say, well, you call yourself a liberal, but you adopt this illiberal position on this matter. And they go, yeah, but I just kind of feel that it doesn't apply there. Much harder argument to make theologically, that sort of thing.
The end time stuff is the bit that I am left wanting to know more about. Because, I mean, Mike Huckabee, obviously he's got a significant position, but he's not at the apex of the administration. How live, how current is that sort of thinking? How much is it actually influencing any of what's going on? Because there are times where you think, gosh, like, do they really understand what sort of collision course the world is on right now if they don't pull back from some of these actions in Iran?
Yeah, and it's most visible, I guess, in the strain of thinking of Christian Zionism in the US, isn't it? Where you have this really interesting spectacle of evangelical Christians in the US cheering on Israel, even at the cost of the lives or the living conditions of Christians in the Palestinian territories. It's this sort of strange thing, but only with an eschatological view of history can you kind of make any sense of it. The problem with all of that, I think, is you end up in a politics and a theology where it's about ends rather than means. And I think what's so fascinating about the way that Pope Leo has approached this is he's a proper theologian, and proper theologians aren't ultimately about ends. They are about means. That's the point of theology, is that the means matter. It's not just you can sacrifice ends for means if you have to. And I think it's just watching two quite contradictory modes of thinking and modes of doing morality coming together in this sort of situation. And I don't – maybe all we're seeing, Hamish, is that those contradictions are finally becoming manifest, because the lot has been thrown in with a figure who brings them to the surface in a way that George W. Bush would never have done that. I think it's a really, really intriguing moment. It could be – there is a risk that we say this every week in the Trump presidency, I grant you. But it feels pivotal in some kind of longer, more, philosophical or theoretical way.
Well, Willie, this has been a lot of fun. I hope we can do it again.
Sure, let's do it. Anytime you like.
Don't forget to write to us. We love your questions and feedback, so please do keep it coming. global.roaming@abc.net.au. We're getting heaps in on the Indonesia mini-series. We will include that in the coming episodes.
Huge thanks to our producers today, Jesse Kay and Kylie Gray. Jerry and Latika in your podcast feed tomorrow on the economic impacts of the Iran war.
Until next time, Waleed.
See ya.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.